Welcome to the Free to Choose Media Podcast. Today's podcast from 1993 includes Robert Ebel, International Government Finance Economist, Milton Friedman, 1976 Nobel Laureate in Economics, and Tom Hazlitt, former editor-in-chief of the Wesleyan Review. They discuss the pitfalls and triumphs of privatizing what were once solid socialist countries. We hope you enjoy today's podcast and stop by each week for a new episode of the Free to Choose Media Podcast.
The world is today experiencing an experiment that has no precedent whatsoever. It's a great experiment. There have been many cases in which countries that have been ruled by a dictator or a military junta have been able to get rid of them and convert to free democratic societies. But in every case in the past, those are societies in which private property determined the economic distribution of power. There is no case on record of a totalitarian country like such as that which was exemplified by the Soviet Union and its satellites, which has been able to make the transition from totalitarianism to a free democratic society. For the first time in the history of the world, we are seeing that happening. And what happens will affect in very great measure the happiness of millions and millions and millions of people all around the globe. This transition is inevitable. It's coming about because the centralized totalitarian system failed. It simply broke down. The fall of the Berlin Wall was the signal which everyone understood. Everyone understood that what it said was a system in which all power is concentrated, power over the economy, power over the political structure, power over people's activities. Any society in which all power is concentrated in a small group of people is not going to work. All right, the problem now is, how do you make the transition? Governments are too strong. How are they cut down? How is that residual political power exercised? The same thing applies on the economic front. How are we going to decentralize the economy and introduce private property as a basic method of ownership? We want to talk right now about the political problem. And here we have Bob Ebel, who is a consultant to international organizations, who has spent a great deal of time in the East European countries, and whose major interest is in the reorganization of the political system. I want to ask you, Bob, what is going on now in the countries with which you have some familiarity?
Well, your opening comments just remind me, I just would stress, as you started to say, that it is going to happen. There is going to be this decentralization, and this is what's going on, decentralization not only of the economy, but of the fiscal, of the governmental system. One is reminded of those who would suggest that it's not going to be successful. You mentioned it's the first experiment, but I'm absolutely confident it's going to be successful, because one is reminded of King Canute standing on the British shore, the Danish king of England, and commanding the waves to stop, and the waves are coming in.
But you know, when you talk about it being successful, there are various degrees of success. Well, some of the Latin American countries, for example, have not done very well, although they supposedly mm-hmm. have
have the right laws and the right constitution.
Supposedly.
Absolutely. Well, the first stages, and it's very early stages, but the trends are good. The first stages are, what's going on is that the countries in a very kind of mixed speed and diversity of their own institutional, economic, and demographic circumstances are moving towards first setting down the constitutions and the laws. We have, for example, with respect to the whole question of intergovernmental and fiscal issues, a series of laws on local self-governments, essentially trying to delineate what would a central role and a subnational or local role be. I think we should discuss some of the problems with those.
But where is this happening? Is this is it the same rate in, for example, in Hungary and Poland and Czechoslovakia?
Well, it's not the same rate. Hungary, for example's law is well in place, but is going through revisions. Romania now is just reviewing their whole circumstances. Bulgaria is at this very moment trying to determine what sort of options they have in writing these laws. And some of the laws are very explicit. Government, local government, central government shall do these sorts of things. Their revenue shall be these kind of arrangements. Others, the debate is much more broader, bundling, if you will, responsibilities.
But there are two questions that arise in this connection. One is, what shall government do?
Mm-hmm.
And where shall it be done, at the local level, at the in-between level, at the total level?
Yeah.
Suppose you turn for a moment just to the first, what's happening in these various countries with respect to what government shall do?
It's breaking, but may I just, let's go on to a third point as well, is how they might do these things, not what governments should, but also how they might do it.
Sure.
I think that gets us into some very important issues of building choice and competition into the system at the early stages. What shall they do? The countries are following a not unfamiliar pattern of determining that stabilization is a central responsibility, but much of the service delivery is going to be at a local level. The whole question about how to deal with state enterprises, these great state monopolies that did all sorts of different things, how to deal with them. They've dealt with them in Czechoslovakia by trying to immediately privatize. In the case of Hungary and a couple other countries, they've divested, if you will, from the central to the local governments, creating some real problems there in terms of how local governments budget. How shall they do these things and what the role of government will be is a critical question with respect particularly to the decentralization linkage to the private markets. Let me give you an example in Hungary. What has happened there is, and this is not uncommon in the other countries, is this law that has passed to say, okay, these properties are going to become part of the local government, and you shall go about the problem of privatization. Along with all this comes issues of capital markets and writing laws for private property and for private ownership, issues of restitution as well as privatization, and issues of how to get capital in order to accomplish this privatization.
In the Czech Republic, I think they did it very differently.
They did it very differently there. Tom, you can speak better than I can on this. But in the
Czech Republic. Don't hesitate to break in on this, Tom.
The Czechs have not been sitting around since 1989 debating about possible ways to reform the system. They started very quickly to reform the system. Very quickly adopted a commercial code and a bankruptcy law, mm-hmm. and began privatizing the economy with the emphasis on speed, speed, speed. I see in these other countries an irony, particularly in Hungary. Hungary started out with much more private ownership and even some would say better democratic institutions because of the influence of the West. For 25 years, the Hungarians were, in fact, bringing in Western influence and having a gradual reform that the Soviets tended to overlook because the Hungarians had supported the Warsaw Pact so nicely, as opposed to the Czechs. But the Hungarians now are bogged down. They have all these interest groups that are blocking reform.
That was a point you were making,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, bogged down because what you've done is you've given, just take the term for now, these properties have been transferred to local governments, and suddenly local governments are looking and say, maybe we want to hold on to these. So a fundamental problem of recognizing that, as a colleague has said at the bank, the business of government is not business has yet to be fully addressed. I think it's quite true that there are, and it's really need to stress this, there are people in these countries who understand this. And there are people in these countries who are working very hard on the bankruptcy laws and private property. But
But don't.
It's a catch. It's
but
a
don't neglect
problem.
The fact that there are people in these countries who don't want it to happen.
They sure don't. They sure
and
don't.
Who, if it does happen, they want to be sure they're the ones who benefit from
they're
it.
They're the ones. And so there's this, and it's a huge hurdle that I think that we have to deal with, is moving the state-owned enterprises into the private market. This is a classic example of how this whole question of the fiscal decentralization and economic decentralization or privatization are so intimately linked. Some of these properties, by the way, have a negative net worth, and so it's been.
What do you mean, some of them?
Well, many of them. The nice residential areas of Budapest will be privatized. But no, that's right. They all. There's a huge negative net worth problem there, and so then the question is, how do you go about doing the privatization? What is the effect on the government budget?
But so far as the powers which government retains.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody will agree, even though they don't do it, that government is going to get rid of the ownership and operation of the major enterprises of the country. As I say, they don't all agree that they're going to, which ones they'll retain.
Mm-hmm.
But there's widespread agreement that from 100% ownership that they had before, or near 100%, it wasn't always 100%, it's going to go way down. But there are other powers of government, such as a power to keep the law and order, to
mm-hmm.
prevent harm from one person to another, to run schools, to provide for roads, and so on. And how is that going?
Well, it's going in a mixed way. These local government laws have often allocated most of those responsibility, often with the exception of police powers, I might add, to the local governments.
And in so, all of these countries?
Yes, I believe now in all these countries. And it's a first step, this is an important step. There is a lot of debate going on as to how sensible some of these local government acts are. They tend to say, list, this is your expenditure responsibilities, here's your revenue authority, and then the catch, if that's the right term, what happens there, and then there's transfers to take care of this gap. The transfers essentially are still an indirect way of the central government being able to preempt, control local
by rent. Transfers, you mean transfers?
Grants, intergovernmental grants.
You mean that the central government
mm-hmm.
gives the local community a grant of money.
Grants. Mm-hmm.
Along with giving them the authority to do things which the central government did before.
So yes, giving them some authority. Often those are, as you know what can happen with grants, many strings are attached to those things.
He who pays a piper calls a tune.
That's right. Well, there's a problem. The local officials are well aware of this, and the local officials vary. I mean, that's one of the nice things about this whole intergovernmental thing. But local officials recognize that it is up to them to build the capacities and build the competencies, if you will, in order to take control of their own systems.
But if I may ask a very simple question, an elementary question, who decides who the local authorities are?
Well,
are there elections
there
at a local
elections.
Level? Or
there
are they...
elections, yes. There are elections.
Yeah.
Are most local officials, well now, under the old system, local officials were named by the central government. They were employees, essentially, of the central authority. Has there been a fundamental change in that respect in these countries?
I think certainly in some countries there's been a fundamental change. A fundamental enough that it's interesting to see, which we see, by the way, in this kind of the United States, just as every once in a while, as soon as the central government thinks they've got things all kind of neatly done in their budget, there's a mayor over in the east part of the country that says, no, I'm going to do something differently. So then they have to deal with that mayor. Suddenly another mayor jumps up in another part of the country. No, this diversification of decentralization of political power is occurring in many countries. And it's occurring in a way that I think is being accomplished with, one, capacity building of local governments, two, a recognition that one of the major problems, and I give a lot of credit, I think, to the Hungarians on this, a major problem is the size of government and that moving government closer to the people with some of its problems still, as a way to reduce the role of overall government. And thirdly, that that if they're going to do basic things like educate kids, educate students, that they should have the autonomy and the right to make agreements among themselves, among local governments, what we call intergovernmental cooperation, and that is occurring. So,
but that can be a disaster if you've got these apparatchiks strewn out throughout the countryside that are very adept at controlling these local governments. I mean, you look at the Czech Republic; they took away a lot of local autonomy in the first round of privatization, which was essentially within 2 years to auction off 27,000 small businesses. And local officials were involved in that process, but they had very little discretion allowed to them by the national government. They had to get rid of these properties through an auction process, public auctions. And in fact, that's been a tremendously a helpful way to jumpstart small business within that economy. And it really has moved the process along and eliminated a lot of corruption.
If you go to Poland now, there you have a different problem having to do with the school system, namely the Catholic Church versus the rest of the community. The Catholic churches wanted to dominate the school system.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they, I think, tried to achieve a monopoly of the school system, didn't they? Do you happen to know?
I do not know.
But I know that's been a major problem in Poland.
And that's certainly been part of the reaction against reform.
Absolutely.
The left parties are very anti-Catholic, and they got a lot of support because of that. You know, there has been a backlash.
If you go to Hungary, you see a vibrant school choice system underway.
When you say a vibrant school choice, is this school choice within the public schools, or is it between public and private schools?
It's within the public schools.
So then it's not a vibrant school choice system.
It's more vibrant than, let's say, we see in this country often.
Well, that's a very low standard.
I need to check on just whether or not the this is true about the private. I'm not sure how the private fits in there. But
because I believe in the Polish case, they now have essentially free choice among governmental or private or church or religious schools. I believe that they have the equivalent of the kind of thing we're trying to get in California now of a voucher system.
This conversation sort of raises the question again and again about how quickly all these things are happening. And I guess this is why I'm an optimist on this. There's a lot of tension going on between the central and local officials on this privatization issue. But there are also, I think, as economists, we appreciate having a literature and kind of something to respond to. This just doesn't exist in these countries,
of course,
fundamentally. And there isn't the capacity. There's not a real clear institutional set of arrangements. They intellectually understand this stuff of how budgets operate, for example. But these things are moving ahead. They're moving ahead in various speeds, but they're moving ahead. And it's a canoe kind of thing. I mean, it's the waves are coming in.
Where do you think what are the big mistakes? They're doing many things right, but they're obviously doing something wrong. And in your judgment, as someone who has been observing this process very closely, what do you think are the major mistakes that they've been making?
Well, I mentioned the comment that my colleague Richard Bird and Christine Wallach made, that the business of government should not be business. And I think a major mistake is failing to really come to grips with that problem. And that gets us into our privatization issue. A second mistake, maybe, and this I'm now reflecting my own Western experience, is the tendency for these local government acts to be very specific about what government shall or shall not do. I'm much more comfortable with the idea of bundling responsibilities and rights and giving broad kind of directions and letting the system work out.
Well, and the principle of the United States Constitution was to specify limited powers, first for the federal government, then for the local governments, and retain all the rest of the power to the people.
And the 10th Amendment says exactly, yeah. And they could use some 10th Amendments, I think. but in defense of what's going on there as well, there is a political agenda to decentralize this power. And in many cases, there's been a concern there's been over-fragmentation as a result. Poland is now a country the size half of California is thinking about 280 intermediate levels of government. And you want to say, you know, this is over fragmentation. And so those kinds of problems. There's a political agenda that and the political choices are also part of this whole range. But going back to the problems, I think maybe a third problem is just the getting the capacity of local governments established. And that goes right back to Tom's point, that there still is a huge central presence. The state may be withering away in many cases. It's withering a lot faster in some places than others, I can assure you. There are still a couple of circumstances of countries where your mail is open. I mean, this does occur. So there is that kind of power. But I'll tell you, the good thing about local government acts is that they've created all these sets of mayors and all these sets of local officials who are competent, huge human capital, they're skilled.
I don't understand you. You know. You told me that these mayors were elected. That doesn't assure they're competent.
Well, no, it does not ensure they're competent.
And have they mostly been elected, or have they mostly been designated?
Well, the circumstances I'm familiar with is the election process, and I'm most familiar with Hungary. The elections are genuine elections, and mm-hmm. there's going to be some real important tug of wars coming up again.
But well, you just had this election process in Poland, mm-hmm. which essentially gave a vote of confidence to the former communists reorganized, and the people who were responsible, Bacelar, I never can pronounce his name, but Bacelarovic, who was really a major force in the initial opening up of the Polish economy, the party which he was with lost power, whereas the party formed by the ex-communists gained power, so that it's a mixed bag, to put it mildly.
Well, and there are these evil political forces lurking. The forces of protectionism, the forces of anti-Semitism and nationalism, and so forth. They're certainly very much on the rise in Poland. They're certainly on the rise, or already ascendant in Hungary, in terms of the nationalist crusade conducted there now by the chief of state. And it seems as though that there really is a problem with gradualism.
And, but we should say there, especially with protectionism.
It's not unique to this country.
No, that we're largely to blame. I mean, the West is largely to blame.
I agree with that. That was the fourth point I was going to make on some of the critical issues.
The West, the European common market has really moved to close themselves off from the East European countries. There's nothing the West could do that would be of more value to the East European countries than to say to them, if you can produce something that is worth buying at a reasonable price, we're delighted to let you sell it in our markets.
And those countries are properly angry about this. They're
they should
very angry about
they
it.
They shouldn't.
Yeah. By the way, there are a couple of French farmers waiting outside for you, Milton.
Yes, I know.
But it's not.
What do you mean? What do you mean? There are no American farmers outside waiting for me?
I think that's a good and important fourth point. When we talk about some of the problems that are occurring, I think that is perhaps overriding all of this, is that we're not opening the Western markets, and that's not only doing exactly what you said in terms of not moving this process along, sending the wrong set of signals.
Absolutely.
And the signals are turn back to the Soviet,
right.
former Soviet bloc, and that's occurring. That's occurring now. Critical problem.
Yeah. Well, isn't that a pathetic lack of leadership in the West? I mean,
it's
a time for leadership.
There's no doubt that
it's very obvious that we should be liberalizing and inviting these people into the community.
Absolutely, absolutely. In respect of the particular problem of the East European countries, the common market is a main blame, because the common market professes to want to expand, to want to include the Eastern European countries and to have a broader common market. At the same time, they're doing everything they can not to let their products come in. Mm-hmm. So they're the most guilty at the moment. Mm-hmm. But none of the rest of us have much that we can point to with pride. We haven't opened our markets to them. The Japanese haven't opened their markets to them. In fact, we're saying to all of them, we want you to be free market, private enterprise countries, but for God's sakes, Do it on your own. Don't think you're going to get part of our market.
Yeah, we liked you better when you were a communist country and had nothing worth buying.
That's right. The problem in all of these cases, I think, both in the countries that are trying to restructure and in our own, is that there's an inevitable tendency to put most emphasis, to give most power to the producers and to neglect the consumers. Mm-hmm. But it's the consumers who ought to be the ultimate objective of the rulers.
Which, if I may, raises another point I think is ahead. I wouldn't rule out as having some chance, perhaps more chance than the Western companies, is putting that consumer interest into the public sector as well. It's mostly anecdotal now, but people do recognize that there is merit to putting choice and competition into the governmental system. And I think this is one of the reasons, going back to our fiscal decentralization, why moving the power from the central local government is a critical first step and is part and parcel of this whole private property and long-term growth strategy. The local officials are ones I think we have our best chance to say, look, putting the process of consumer choice into governments, competing bureaucracies, for example, pricing mechanisms, vouchers. We're seeing that perhaps more in some of these countries than we're seeing in our own Western countries. And so as I start out, still be very optimistic. There are things that are going on in those countries that it would be nice to see some of the Western countries adopt. I can give you a technical example of the way the Hungarian grants are being targeted now. It's not a perfect system, but it's a system that is targeted on the basis of an objective attempt to make needs, but still they're blocked grants.
Grants by the federal government.
Grants by, to equalization, but just to let it go at that.
And not to specify precisely what they shall be used for.
There are other sorts of grants that do that, but the movement is towards the other.
Block grant,
and it's a block grant based on an equalization concept.
What you say is true. We have much to learn from them.
Yeah.
As much as they have to learn from us. Indeed, I've been saying, it seems to me that we're trying, in the West, many of us, to go to where they were 10 years ago, while they're trying, as hard as they can, to go to where we were 50 years ago.
It's going to be a long haul for them.
It's going to be a long haul for us.
I'll tell you, and for us. But, well, my optimism
is clearly. Of course it's a long haul for them. It's a long haul for them because, remember, it took us in the West 150 years to get to the point where we could afford the kind of government waste we now have. Mm-hmm. And they're not rich enough to afford that.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Well, that gets us into the issue too, as well as how the privatization and the business and this whole question about how these state-owned enterprises are going to be dealt with.